Welcome to Orlando Means Business. This season, we're hearing from industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are shaping the Orlando region's thriving business landscape. I'm your host, Laureen Martinez, and today we're learning about how Orlando is becoming a prominent leader in the cybersecurity industry. In today's digital landscape, with terabytes of sensitive information at stake, no company or organization can afford to leave their network vulnerable. And with the widespread adoption of remote work, corporate boundaries are stretching far beyond office buildings. While that's revolutionizing the way we work and interact online, it's also opening the door to cyber criminals seeking to exploit vulnerabilities. So that's why companies are investing more than ever in top-notch cybersecurity and antivirus software. So today we have a global leader in the cybersecurity industry. It's a company you want to learn from. It's developing innovative software and endpoint security technologies right here in Orlando. So I'm joined by Danny Jenkins, the CEO and co-founder of ThreatLocker. Thanks for being with us today.
I appreciate you inviting me today.
Yes, please. Thank you so much for your insight. We're really excited about what you will be talking about. Cyber threats are getting more advanced and widespread. In 2023, President Joe Biden signed an executive order to improve the nation's cybersecurity in response to the rise of significant cybercrimes. Some of us might remember the SolarWinds attack and the Colonial Pipeline attack. As an expert, what did you think when you heard about those attacks?
The funny thing is, we hear about those attacks all the time. There's large companies, large corporations that make headlines. And I feel like one of the fears about hearing about those attacks is people think this isn't them. That's not my business. I'm a small business. I'm a local business. I'm 50 employees, 5 employees, 500 employees. Why would somebody go after our business? So when I hear those, it's not a surprise. I mean, we see cyber security weakness across thousands or millions of American companies and individuals. But those bigger companies often get the headlines. So when we see them, it's bad, and we understand that this is a big threat. And the SolarWinds particularly, because it's a threat against the government. The Colonial was more a private company, but again, it affects us in our pockets. It affects every single person in their pockets. But I think the real fear when you hear those attacks is everybody goes back into, well, I'm not that company. And we heard the same with MGM Resorts when they were attacked. Everyone's saying, well, I'm not the MGM. But the reality is, for every attack you hear about, there's 1,000 attacks you don't hear about. And they happen to local companies, regional companies, national companies that aren't at the scale of those bigger ones that make the headlines.
And are those smaller companies easier targets?
Yeah, so they're definitely easier targets because they don't have nearly the cybersecurity capacity that the larger companies do. And they're also easier to get money out of because if you're someone like the MGM, whether you pay or not, you're probably going to recover from that attack. You probably have enough recovery in place and you've got a big enough bank budget to buffer the impact to your business. But when you're a small company, quite often, you don't have that buffer. You don't have those resources to recover. And you end up having to pay these ransoms. And then even when you pay the ransoms, the impact on your business is so severe, it's hard to get those customers back.
So those examples, especially those larger examples, I think it shows the evolution of threats and how it's ever-changing. And so I would imagine companies like ThreatLocker have to constantly stay ahead of what could potentially happen. So how do you do that? How do you stay ahead of the curve in terms of innovation and adaptability?
So there's two parts to this. One is you can't. You can't stay ahead of the curve. And that's kind of why we exist as a company. We obviously have a huge team here in Orlando. We are constantly hunting for threats. We're constantly finding new ways that attackers are trying to get around security. But then we also recognize that it's not possible to stay ahead of every threat. So we kind of change the way we think about security. Rather than trying to find every bad guy out there, what we do is we say, we're going to block everything and only allow what you need. So we're not looking for threats. What we're looking for is what is needed in your environment, and everything else, therefore, must be a threat. So we just block it that way. And that's really important because the way companies have looked at security in the past, it's very much like, I'm going to put a security guy on the front desk or a bouncer on the door that says, I don't like the look of you, so you're not coming in here. And it's very hard to determine what's good and bad sometimes. The way we've approached it is, hey, you're not on the list. You're not coming in here. And that's a far more effective way of doing it. And then in addition to that, we also have the threat hunting teams. But that's more validation than actually the way of blocking these threats.
So your product for companies is being more proactive as opposed to being reactive, but you're also able to be reactive as well.
Yes. So, and the reactive part is really the backup. So what we're saying is we're going to block everything if it's not on your trusted list of software. And that means viruses, malware, games, and even software, because quite often software that people download, there's coupon clippers, for example, that you may add to your web browser that can see all of your passwords. And you don't necessarily know that that's bad. And maybe they're made in China or made in Russia, and they're not exactly friendly countries and friendly developers. And what we're saying is it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. It shouldn't be allowed in the business unless it's permitted and vetted by the business. And then what we have is the detection and the reactive side, really about validating that you did everything right. And it's very much like a simple analogy is, hey, I lock my front door when I leave the house and I only open it for somebody I want in my house. But if I forget to lock it, I also have a house alarm that goes off that makes a lot of noise. Now, that's not going to stop somebody walking in and stealing the television, but it's going to alert and make a lot of noise. And that's the reactive side of security.
That's a really good way of putting it. So in your opinion, what are the most pressing cybersecurity threats that are facing organizations and companies? And what can they do to better prepare themselves to mitigate those risks?
So I think the threat that is most likely to take any company out of business right now is ransomware. And that's the reality of it. There's a lot of spear phishing, a lot of wire fraud and switching out invoice numbers, but that's unlikely to end a company's business. Ransomware, however, is taking down so many small businesses, so many large businesses, and it's getting more sophisticated and more advanced. I think the FBI said it nearly tripled over the last 2 years, and we're continuing to see that evolution. And the problem is, when it happens, we're not talking about one incident, we're talking about an entire company being shut down. Of course, we saw the Colonial Pipeline, we saw the MGM, and those were shut down for a large amount of time. We had people filling up the beds of their pickup truck with gasoline because they were that scared that they wouldn't be able to get gas the next day. But the reality is small companies, quite often healthcare centers, small medical practices, hospitals, they're entirely shutting down the business. So you can't function at all. So I think that's the most concerning threat. And the most common threat is probably wire fraud and spear phishing of some description where somebody gets you to wire money to a wrong account.
I hope you're enjoying Orlando Means Business. I should mention, if you're thinking of Orlando for your business, if you're expanding or looking for a top metro to locate, go to investorlando.org. We've got industry-specific information for you, as well as data on our educated and experienced workforce, real estate options and incentives, plus more to help you get started. You can find us at investorlando.org or click the link in our show notes. It's interesting that you created your company here in Orlando. A lot of people, when they think of Orlando, they think of the theme parks. They think of, you know, all of the fun and games, essentially. But we really have been gaining attention as an emerging hub for cybersecurity innovation. And I think if you kind of follow that reasoning, you know, the large theme parks must have a lot of cybersecurity in place to protect their daily operations. But we won't get into that today. But how is being located in Orlando helped the growth and kind of the evolution and development of your company?
So I think as an international company, and we have customers everywhere from Australia, all across Europe, Africa, right, US, Canada, all over the world, really. First of all, you have to position yourself where you can talk to as many people as possible. And being on the East Coast of the US is a good place to be in general, because the West Coast, it's very hard for them to do business with Europe because their day is beginning when Europe's is ending. With us, we get 4-hour crossover with Europe. So that's very helpful. But the other part of it is, Orlando is not an expensive place to live. It's not an expensive place to do business. And that makes it easier to find talent that isn't paying $3 or $4 million for a family home, which is what you see in California. In Orlando, we get the benefit of getting talent at a lower cost because it's just a cheaper place to live. And it's also got a lot of workforce. A lot of people want to live in Florida. It's a nice place to live. It's got a good climate. It's got low taxes. And it helps us drive people in where we need to pull resources from outside, but also the cost of doing business here is significantly lower.
And there's also institutions, you know, like the University of Central Florida,
that are building programs and building partnerships with companies. And so that flow of talent that's being generated and trained is, ever growing.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of employees from UCF. They've got from both their degree programs, but also their HackEU program and some of their smaller pointed cybersecurity programs where people can go in, learn something, and then we've hired them straight out of there. And then, of course, they've had to go through more training to get up to spec. But many times as a company, most of the staff you're hiring don't have to have 10 years experience. You need some, and you need some that can do the day-to-day stuff.
Can you take us back to the inception of ThreatLocker and share your personal experience that led to its creation?
So it's worth noting, three years before we started ThreatLocker, we sold another company we'd founded at a smaller value. It was an email security company. And at this point, I was doing two things. And it was myself, Sammy, who's my wife and the COO, and another co-founder who founded ThreatLocker. I was doing ethical hacking. So I was showing companies their weaknesses. This is how companies get around your security. But what it turned into was mostly me doing ransomware recoveries, because my name got out there. We understand how ransomware work, how these companies work. So we were being brought into, can you help me recover? And I remember a case actually in Australia. We'd been brought in to help with this company in Australia, a small insurance company that had been hit by ransomware. And about a week into the recovery, their backups were gone. They'd paid the ransom. They hadn't got their data back. And the owner of this company, and they were probably a 100-employee company, so they weren't big, maybe even less than that. He called me, and he was a 60-year-old man, and his voice was quivering. He was very emotional on the call. And he said, what's going to happen? Are we going to be able to recover? And at this point, we did not know if we were going to be able to get enough data back. Now, they did recover at great cost and great loss. They had to rebuild lots of data, claims data, insurance databases, everything you can imagine.
Wow.
And that was one of the cases that made me think, you have to change the way you're thinking, because these had pretty sophisticated security, and that security was all about the detection of threats, but nothing to stop things by default. And when we suggested that as a method, they pushed back and said it was too hard. Their IT team said it was too hard. So what we said is, we've got to build it. And it was nowhere near as easy to build as we thought. But that was the prime driver behind ThreatLocker. Now, the difficulty in getting to it was a lot more worse than we thought.
Wow. So tell me about, it seems like few companies are thinking about this. So what is your competition like? I mean, it feels like you guys are doing something that's very unique in the industry.
Yeah. And there are point solutions that offer kind of what we do, but in a very complex way. So when we think about competition, we think about it in three different ways. One is the direct competing solutions, which tend to be software and very, very difficult to manage solutions. But realistically, that's 0.1% of our business that comes from those competing deals. The other area is we start competing with the status quo, which is, this is what you're doing now, which is really nothing. This is what you should be doing. So the way we have to deal with that is, we have to educate. So we have to tell the community, this is how malware works. And we had a conference here in Orlando in February, and we literally had hacking labs where we show people to come in, this is how you hack, this is how you bypass security. And their brain starts working, going, oh, I didn't realize you could do that. And then they realize, what can I do to stop this?
So wait a minute, you're teaching people how to hack?
Yeah, I mean, not with the intention of making them hackers, because we're not making them that good. We're really scaring them enough that they understand the threats of it. But the idea is, if we can teach people this is how you bypass security, then they can start thinking, well, how do I stop it being bypassed? How do I plug that hole? The reality is, most hackers are coming into America, coming in from outside the US, Russia being the single biggest source of attacks on the US. So we're teaching people how to hack in lab environments. It's fun for them. It's great. They use rubber ducky hacking devices, OMG cables. We fly a drone in with a Wi-Fi interception to overpower the Wi-Fi and steal their Wi-Fi connection. And it's a great experience for people, but then they go away and they say, oh, I never even thought about this. And we signed a very large customer actually in the Middle East recently, after their chief information security officer took our challenge to plug our device into their computer. And we exfilled all of their data past their EDR. And of course, we didn't keep it, because.
Right.
But if we can educate people that the status quo isn't enough, And that's the fear that we have. Most people believe they're doing enough and they're not. Then that's going to make them more successful. Even if they don't buy ThreatLocker, they're going to be more successful in that they know they're dealing with other threats, and it's going to make us more successful.
How'd you come up with the name? It's a scary name, but also reassuring at the same time. I think it's a really interesting combination of words.
I would like to say it was sophistication and planning, but it was more that we had no idea and all of the .com domains were gone. So we took every set of cybersecurity words in the world and we dumped them into a word generator, and it spat out everything that was still available, which was very little. And that seems like a good name.
Yeah, it's a great name. Well, looking ahead, how do you envision the future of Orlando's cybersecurity ecosystem, and how does ThreatLocker plan to contribute to its continued growth and prominence on a national and global scale?
So, and I think when we started in Orlando, there was a few other cybersecurity companies, none as big as ThreatLocker is now in Orlando. And it was harder at the beginning to get talent because people weren't that excited about cybersecurity in Florida. Now people are getting more and more excited. We're at 345 employees now. And to put that into perspective, at the beginning of 21, we were 25 employees.
Wow. So we've gone from 25
to 340 something. And we're hiring realistically. We're probably going to nearly double this year as well. So I think what we're seeing is more and more people wanting to move to Orlando, but also the Orlando population saying, oh, cybersecurity is an exciting opportunity for me. And our partnerships with Orlando Magic and our partnerships with the branding in the area is getting people's, as they leave college, hey, I want to do this. I want to figure out how to defend companies from a cybersecurity point of view. One reason it's a good career, it's a good income, but also it's an exciting career. And it's a noble career. It's something that you produce value and you stop bad guys doing something.
And it will always be in demand.
And it's unfortunately, it will always be in demand.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really, really enjoyed our conversation. And thank you for listening to Orlando Means Business, a production of the Orlando Economic Partnership and the University of Central Florida. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. The Orlando Economic Partnership is an economic and community development organization that works to advance broad-based prosperity and create a more prosperous economy for all. Learn why opportunity in Orlando is unbelievably real at investorlando.org.